Forest Rangers, what are your unexplainable and downright creepy stories? Story 1. One of my best friends from college was a geology major who later became a ranger in the southeastern United States. I haven't spoken to him in years, but I remember about 8 or 9 years ago, he told me about an elderly married couple he had recently helped. He noticed they had been coming to the park several days in a row and learned that they were visiting from out west, returning to the place where they had gotten engaged decades earlier. They had been searching for the exact spot where he had proposed but couldn't find it. After looking at their photos and figuring out roughly where they were trying to go, my friend escorted them in his vehicle and then hiked with them to the place he thought it was. They found it, and he left them there, returning to his station at the entrance. He said that once he got back, he had a strange feeling and thought he should wait until they left. When it was time to lock up for the night, he still hadn't seen them, so he reported it, left his assistant at the entrance, and went back to the spot. He found them lying together along the bank of the river, both already gone. He called the police, followed all the procedures, and eventually went home. Later, he learned that the wife was terminally ill, and they had chosen to end their lives together by taking a mixture of substances in the place where they had gotten engaged. He wasn't deeply shaken by it, though, of course, saddened. He believed they hadn't asked for help earlier because they didn't want anyone to feel complicit in their decision. Story 2. I have a friend who works as a trail ranger, which basically means he helps maintain the land but doesn't enforce the law. He told me about a time he was out with another ranger removing illegally placed wildlife cameras, hunting stands, feeders, and blinds. The other ranger wasn't feeling well and decided to head back since it was about a one-hour ride on an ATV. My friend finished up the last task when he suddenly heard voices, which was unusual because he was far off the beaten path. He called out, but no one responded. As it was getting dark, he started heading back, only to find his ATV wouldn't start. The battery was disconnected. After fixing it, he drove off, but the vehicle quickly slowed and died less than half a mile later. He radioed for help, and they told him it would take about an hour to reach him. He asked if the other ranger had made it back, and they said no. He made a small fire while waiting, but soon the voices returned. They sounded like an argument, one person angry, another frightened. He called out to ask if anyone needed help, but the voices ignored him. They seemed close, maybe less than 1,000 feet away. He radioed again, but the team was having trouble finding his location since the other ranger had left with the iPad that contained the map. They still hadn't seen him return. A few minutes later, the voices started up again. My friend decided to approach, thinking maybe they were just drunk and could help. But as he walked closer, the voices seemed to move further away. After 20 minutes of trying, he gave up and returned to his fire. Soon after, he got a radio call saying the other ranger had been found passed out, sick, and taken to the hospital. But they had a general idea where my friend was. Then his radio died. The voices returned. Listening carefully, he caught fragments of their argument. Things like, "It wasn't yours to take," and "You knew better." Then he heard a shout, then silence, then a gunshot. He quickly doused his fire and hid. For the next half hour, he sat frozen until he finally saw ATV lights coming for him. He told the ranger who picked him up what had happened, and they sent out a search team. They looked for 3 hours and found nothing. The next day, they returned with police and dogs, and after about an hour, they discovered a shallow grave containing the skeleton of a man who had been shot in the face years earlier. The unsettling part is that either the argument he heard ended with both people simply walking away that night, or somehow he heard the echo of a murder that had taken place long ago. Story 3. I have been a ranger in the United States Forest Service for almost 15 years, but this happened about 3 years after I first joined. We were getting calls about a lone wolf with a collar being seen near campsites, which was strange since wolves weren't known to be in that area. But after working in the field, you learn that almost anything is possible. None of the calls had mentioned aggressive behavior, thankfully. Around noon, I left the station to check the reported locations. After about 3 hours without any new sightings, I stopped for water and a snack. As I was getting ready to head out again, I saw the animal about 20 feet away, trotting along the tree line. It looked friendly and was wearing a collar, so I whistled, and it came over. Up close, I realized it wasn't a wolf. It was very large and dark, but its body structure wasn't quite right, though I could see how people had been confused. I radioed in to report that I had the dog with me, but as soon as I mentioned bringing it in, the animal suddenly bolted, as if trying to get me to chase it. I ran after it, and it really did feel like a game of chase that lasted at least 5 minutes as we moved deeper into the forest. Finally, the dog slowed near a rocky creek bed and began pacing around a particular spot. At first, I didn't notice anything unusual, but then I realized that the overgrowth was concealing bones. I immediately called it in, and another team was dispatched to recover the remains. When I turned back to look for the dog, it had disappeared. At that point, though, the priority was the discovery. The remains were later identified as those of a teenage boy who had died by a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. He had been reported missing years before I ever became a ranger, and by then, most hope of finding him had been lost. His mother later called to thank me personally. She asked how I had found him, and I mentioned the black dog. There was a long pause before she gently explained that her son had fallen into a deep depression after losing his best friend, the very same dog I had described. To this day, I struggle to fully understand what happened, but I know what I saw. Story 4. I was part of a scouting-type group when I was younger, so we spent a lot of time in the woods. Strange things happened often, but usually there was a logical explanation. One night, though, something happened that still unsettles me to this day. I was a leader for the group of kids aged 8 to 10, and we were on a camping trip. The terrain was much larger than usual, so we didn't have the chance to fully explore it before the kids arrived. Each camp included what we called a night game, where the kids had to complete tasks while the leaders scared them. During one of these games, I masked up like a monster and ran between checkpoints, chasing kids. While moving through a stretch of open forest, I saw a shadow about my size running past me more than once. At first, I assumed it was just the dark playing tricks on me, since I saw nothing when I used my flashlight. As the game wound down, I spotted the shadow again, this time near a tree. I thought it was another leader and walked over. When I shined my flashlight, I froze. There was someone standing there wearing a torn burlap sack and several white plastic bags tied together over his head. His arms and legs were smeared with mud, his hands twisted in a cramped position, and he was barefoot. He made no response when I asked if he was okay, only a dull knocking sound. As I stepped closer, about 10 meters away, I realized he was banging his head against the tree. I assumed it had to be a prank, so I told him to cut it out. Instead, he slowly turned his head and began walking toward me. A wave of dread came over me, and something inside told me to run. I sprinted back to camp, too afraid to look behind me, and found that all the other leaders were already there. None of them could have changed clothes and beaten me back in time. The next day, I brought another leader with me to check the spot. There, nailed to the very tree where I had seen the figure, was a skinned, decomposing rabbit. We called the police, who dismissed it as a prank by kids from the nearby town. Nothing else unusual happened during that camp, but the memory of that night still leaves me cold. Story 5. I was hunting on public land with my dad, several miles away from any trail. It was a slow day with bad weather, and I hadn't heard a single gunshot in hours, so I figured the deer weren't moving much. I radioed my dad to say I'd head back, and we agreed to meet at the spot where we had split up that morning. About 20 minutes later, I was at the edge of a pond, stripping off my heavy camo layers and putting them in my bag while listening to music through my earbuds. As I shifted things around, I thought I faintly heard someone yelling. I pulled out an earbud and looked up. On the other side of the pond was a forest ranger crouched down, just watching me. I stood but didn't wave, unsure if he had even been the one yelling. We locked eyes for what felt like a few minutes. For clarity, I wasn't doing anything illegal. My rifle was unloaded and slung over my shoulder, and I had all the required gear. Still, I radioed my dad, saying, "We've got company," so he wouldn't be surprised. But when I looked back up barely 15 seconds later, the ranger was gone, completely vanished. Later, I told my dad what happened, and he said maybe the ranger thought we were up to no good and left when he saw me on the radio, worried it might be an ambush. The thought hadn't crossed my mind at the time. I usually get nervous around law enforcement, but it struck me later that maybe they feel that same tension in the woods. If that was really a ranger out there, I want to say my apologies and thank you for the work you do. Story 6. I was in the Gila Wilderness, and a group of us camped.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
And fishers were driving the dirt road from Mogollon to Snow Lake when we saw a forest ranger pulled over, looking down into a ditch. Apparently, someone had tried to make a U-turn without realizing how the loose rock makes stopping nearly impossible, and their vehicle had gone over the edge and gotten stuck. We were miles from the nearest official campground, and since it was early spring, the nights were still cold. We got a Jeep with a winch into position and started pulling the car out. Suddenly, a man appeared from over a hill. He was white, thin, blonde, and dressed in nothing but a purple velvet sweatsuit, a fanny pack, and carrying a walking stick. He introduced himself as German and said he was having a great time. We couldn't get over the outfit. It looked like something out of a pimp costume set. The ranger was immediately suspicious, asking where he was staying and how he had gotten there. It was about 9 o'clock in the morning, and the only way he could have come from where he pointed was by hiking for hours. He just laughed and gestured vaguely toward another mountain. We all found it funny but also concerning. He had no food or water, and the sun at 5,000 feet can be brutal even if it's only 75 degrees. He refused all offers of water or help and simply crossed the road, disappearing into the woods. The ranger told us he couldn't stop him since he seemed fine, but he would check the campsites in that direction later. That evening at Snow Lake, after a long day of fishing and drinking, the ranger came by and told us nobody at any camp had seen him. He had radioed around, and no other rangers had reported missing people or abandoned sites, and no one else had seen a German man in a purple velvet sweatsuit. The ranger rolled off duty the next day, and his replacement came by asking if the story was some kind of prank. We assured him it had really happened. We never heard another word about the man in the purple suit, but it remains one of the strangest things I've ever seen. Story 7. My uncle was a ranger in Montana, and he always told this story. He was about 5 to 10 miles away from town, deep in the woods, when he pulled his ATV up to the top of a hill overlooking a valley. Using his binoculars, he spotted a clearing. In that clearing, he saw an older woman, maybe in her 60s, dressed in black and surrounded by 6 to 8 wolves. He panicked, started shouting and honking, then raced down the hill as fast as he could to help. But when he reached the clearing, there was no one there. No wolves, no woman, only a silver ring with a black stone in the middle. He kept the ring, and to this day, he still has it. Story 8. My cousin works for the Forest Service in the Montana-Wyoming area, and I went with her once to see what her job was like. She does hydrology, which means riding out into remote areas to test streams and snow runoff for contaminants. We had to camp out for 2 nights, so we packed everything into saddlebags and headed off on horseback. The first day and night were incredible. The scenery was beautiful, the air was crisp, and it was so peaceful. The next day, she asked if I wanted to see something weird. Naturally, I said yes. She led me 2 hours off our original path into a small ravine. At the very end, she tied up her horse and told me to do the same. She then told me to bring along our rechargeable radio, the kind that works as both a lantern and a crank-powered device. We followed a small wildlife trail until, out of nowhere, we found a coil of wire sticking up from the ground. It wasn't a massive transmission wire, more like standard household wiring, maybe 10 or 12 gauge. Curious, I followed it. The wire snaked across tree limbs, wrapped around rocks, went back into the ground, and eventually ended at a desk. It was the kind of old teacher's desk I remembered from school, with a metal base and fake wood top. There was no chair, no building, nothing else. Just a desk in the middle of the forest with a mounted outlet. I was already baffled, but my cousin then took the radio, pulled out its cord, and plugged it in. To my shock, the outlet was live. The radio lit up and started blasting static. Somehow, in the middle of nowhere with no road access, no nearby buildings, and no power lines, the outlet had electricity. That was it. No bodies, no sudden scares. Just a lone, powered desk in the forest. I regret not taking a picture, because it remains one of the strangest, most inexplicable things I've ever seen. Story 9. I was the lone recreation ranger in a small district in southern Idaho. The nearest town from the guard station was about an hour and a half away by car. After moving into the guard station, I found that the solar power wasn't working, and I barely slept for weeks because of constant disturbances. Bats inside the cabin, something pacing on the deck at night, and an overall eerie atmosphere in those woods that felt unlike the ponderosa forests I had been used to in the Southwest. About 2 months into the seasonal job, I began hearing scratching on the deck at night, sometimes even at the door. The area was known for badgers and beavers, so at first I dismissed it. Still, every time I stepped outside after dark, I couldn't shake the sensation of being watched. One Tuesday evening, after returning from my usual grocery run, I parked and stepped out of the vehicle when I saw two glowing eyes about 3.5 to 4 feet off the ground, around 50 feet from my cabin door. Panic surged through me. I shouted at it to leave, but the eyes only crouched lower and crept closer. I could tell it was large, definitely not a coyote. I threw a piece of firewood in its direction. It jumped back slightly but made no sound. I threw more wood, 4 or 5 pieces, yet it continued edging closer. My keys fumbled in my hands as I realized, once again, the solar power had failed. Somehow I made it inside, grabbed my shotgun, technically not allowed in government housing, but living alone in remote backcountry, I considered it a necessity and went back out. The creature was still there, inching closer, my weak headlamp failing to show its shape clearly. I loaded the shotgun while continuing to toss wood one-handed. Finally, the creature backed into the brush. That night, I drank 4 strong beers and kept the shotgun by my side in bed. In the morning, the trail crew arrived. Together, we found mountain lion tracks covering the porch, the rocking bench, and leading back toward the creek. After that, the nightly disturbances never stopped. I heard the rocking chair creak and footsteps on the porch, but strangely, there were no more tracks, despite the ground being muddy. I've been stalked by mountain lions before, but never once did I feel the same deep, unnatural dread that those woods gave me. Story 10. In 2016, my boyfriend, now my husband, and I went camping in eastern Pennsylvania. The site was primitive, no cell service, no amenities, barely even a road. Camping was free, and there were only a few other people out there. Two stood out. The first was a woman with her truck parked along the roadside, hood up, as though she needed help. Normally, my boyfriend had no issue stopping for people, but something about her struck him as off. She didn't look like she was hoping for assistance. She looked like she simply expected us to stop. He kept driving. Later, as we set up camp and started a fire for hot dogs, a man in a car passed by several times, circling back, always watching us. My boyfriend noticed it was the same car each time. We thought about moving, but the muddy tracks we left behind would have led him right to us anyway. Eventually, the man stopped coming by, and the rest of the evening was uneventful. We brushed it off. The real terror began after dark. Around 3 in the morning, we woke to a deafening sound. It's hard to describe. My boyfriend compared it to a chain gun revving up, or like the recording of a shovel being dragged across gravel, blasted through a loudspeaker. He looked through the tent window but couldn't see anything. The sound repeated, loud and mechanical. Whispering, he told me it was probably far away, miles off, and urged me to sleep. Only later did he admit he believed it was much closer, maybe just down the road, but didn't want to scare me further. Lying there, I was petrified. Every rustle outside the tent sounded like footsteps. Finally, my boyfriend told me to get dressed because we were leaving. My fear spiked when he unwrapped the new machete we had brought for the trip and gripped it before stepping out. We quickly packed our gear, loaded the car, and as I scanned the ground in the moonlight, I spotted something new near our extinguished fire. A beer can that hadn't been there before. We hadn't even brought beer. On the drive out, he explained his fear that someone had been trying to lure us out of the tent. He half expected to find our gas siphoned out, though we had a hybrid car, which would have saved us anyway. We even joked nervously that it could make a good commercial. Number of brutal murders avoided by driving a hybrid, 2. It was the only way to cut the tension as adrenaline coursed through us. For the rest of that trip, we avoided isolated camping and stuck to busy campgrounds or hotels. Story 11. Back in 2010, after completing a wilderness leadership course, I decided to spend some solo time in the wild and headed to Colorado. I had heard about some hot springs along the Colorado River that were only accessible in winter. Once the snow melts in summer, the river rises and submerges them. So I planned to camp there for a few weeks. The area was on Bureau of Land Management land, and it required about a four-mile hike from where I parked to where I set up camp. When I arrived, the BLM ranger who monitored the area asked me to write the date on my windshield once a week, so she'd know I was still alive out there. For the most part, it was pleasant and peaceful, but every night I was terrified of bears. They were supposed to be hibernating, but if they weren't, that meant they were hungry, and I'd make the perfect meal. To feel safer, I pitched my tent near a cliff that dropped about 40 feet down to the river. I reasoned that if a bear came for me, my only chance would be to jump, then get to the hot springs to keep from freezing. It was a crazy plan, but out there alone, you start thinking in extremes. Bear spray isn't much use once you're zipped up inside a tent. One early morning, I was woken by loud animal noises right outside. The grunting and breathing grew closer and closer until I could hear sniffing against my tent walls. I froze, too scared to move. Eventually, the sound shifted away, but more noises joined in. It sounded like several large animals were still lingering outside. Finally, I dared to peek out and saw an entire herd of elk. I swear, despite years of camping, that was one of the most terrified moments I've ever experienced. Story 12. I'm a former ranger, and once we had to deal with a group of fraternity boys making way too much noise late at night. We gave them one warning, then another, and on the second stop, I made it clear. This was their last chance. Not only were they disturbing other campers, but making noise like that at night was dangerous. Everyone in the area knew the local mountain lions, often called ghost cats, were drawn to noise. I told them to stay inside their tents and make no sound if they heard anything. Back at the station, we came up with a plan. We grabbed a lion pelt from the interpretive center and some night vision goggles, gear the head ranger had bought at the end of the previous year's budget. Once the frat boys were tucked away in their tents, we snuck back to the campsite and went to work. We made fake lion tracks everywhere, set up the lion pelt on sticks, and then my partner started broadcasting fake lion calls over the PA system from a distance, slowly moving closer. I drove the Jeep into the camp, jumped out and swept my mag light across the clearing, hitting the silhouette of the lion pelt. Because I moved the light quickly, the shadow looked like it was alive and prowling. The frat boys went into full panic. My partner shouted over the radio, "Stay in your tents! She's coming around at us! Then, there's another one! And finally, let's get the hell out of here!" We cut the lights, yanked the pelt down, and sped away in the Jeep. At sunrise, we watched from a distance as the boys cautiously peeked out. Not one of them dared leave their tent until well past 8 in the morning. When they finally did, they saw the giant paw and claw prints everywhere and completely lost it. It was one of the best pranks we ever pulled. Story 13. This happened while camping out in the forests of New Jersey. We had set up our tents, kept the fire going, and were sitting around chatting and telling scary stories. Everything was fine until we heard rustling in a nearby bush, the kind of textbook moment that feels straight out of a horror story. At first, we thought it was just one of our friends returning from a bathroom break, but then we saw the silhouette of a person circling our tent. We called out, expecting it to be him, but whoever it was didn't respond. When we compared the height of the figure to our friend, it was clear it couldn't be him. That's when the fear set in. One of us bluffed, shouting that we were armed and would defend ourselves. After a long, tense minute, we heard the most shrill scream any of us had ever heard. And then the figure took off into the woods. The creepy part came after. When our friend returned from the bathroom, he confirmed that he had heard the scream too, but he hadn't seen anyone in the area. There were no footprints, nothing to show someone had been walking near our camp. And considering how deep into the woods we were, it wasn't like someone could have just stumbled across us by accident. Story 14. Back in the 1970s, my grandpa had a hunting buddy who lived like a hermit in the Pacific Northwest, deep in the Cascade Mountains. He stayed with him during one trip, in a cabin with no running water or electricity, miles from the nearest paved road. The cabin was built on stilts with a balcony about 10 feet above the ground and no way to climb up. No stairs, no ladder. My grandpa swore this friend was honest, not the type to lie or exaggerate. One evening, the man warned my grandpa that Sasquatch was known to be in the area and told him to be careful going out at night. My grandpa laughed it off, but his friend grew serious, set out a bowl filled with fruit, bread, and jerky on the balcony railing, and told him it would be empty by morning. That night, my grandpa, lying on a cot near the balcony window, was woken by rustling outside. He peeked out and saw the bowl, completely empty. Then he noticed four large fingers curling over the balcony edge before slowly pulling away. He never returned to hunt in that area again. Story 15. About 5 years ago in Canada, my dad spoke to a Chinese woman who had lived alone in the mountains for decades as an unofficial forest surveyor. The government often relied on her for reports about fires or suspicious activity. She told him she had seen Sasquatch multiple times. According to her, they are intelligent creatures that avoid people, but don't seem to mind her presence since she grew up in that region and had spotted them since childhood. My dad described her as calm, rational, and not the type to make up stories. At the time, he owned a strip of gold claim nearby, and she warned him against digging there, saying it would disturb things better left untouched. He wasn't convinced, until he swore he saw one himself. He described what he saw, and she casually said, "That's the female one," before heading back inside and leaving him standing there. He admitted he ran as fast as he could. Story 16. I was hiking in Andorra with a friend when we accidentally strayed off the trail and crossed into Spain. Luckily, we found another path, though we didn't have a map. Ahead of us, we saw a young man with two golden retrievers walking in the same direction. He had climbing gear slung over his shoulder. We hurried to catch up and asked for directions. He explained exactly where we were and that the nearest town with a hotel was about 12 kilometers away. He mentioned another smaller town 6 kilometers ahead where his car was parked and kindly offered to drive us the rest of the way, but he said he was in a hurry. We were relieved and walked with him for a while. The dogs were playful, running circles around us, and the man was friendly. But soon we grew tired and couldn't keep up with his pace. He moved ahead, disappeared behind a bend in the trail, and when we followed minutes later, he was gone. The trail stretched straight ahead with no side paths, so there was no way he or the dogs could have vanished so quickly. Uneasy, we continued on, half expecting some danger, but eventually reached the town safely and made it to a hotel in the next town over. To this day, both of us remain convinced that the man and his dogs were not entirely real. Story 17. In the fall of 2017, I shot a deer just before dark, about 5 miles from my truck. After the shot, I went back to grab my gear and cart. I gutted the deer quickly and began the long haul out. About 2 miles in, my deer cart snapped. A wheel broke clean off. With no other choice, I slung the deer across my back and pushed on. That's when I heard coyotes, maybe 3 or 4, faintly yipping back at the gut pile I'd left behind. Another mile in, I stopped for a breather. That's when it hit me. The yips had multiplied, louder, closer, easily within a quarter mile. There were far more now, maybe a dozen or more. And here I was with only a gut knife and a hatchet, sitting with the main course of their feast on my shoulders. The first 3 miles from my stand were easy walking, but the last two were swampy, tangled, and miserable. Adrenaline surged and I took off zigzagging through the swamp, not daring to look back as the pack closed in, less than 100 feet behind me. On the final stretch, I vaulted a 5-foot gate with the deer still on my back, like it was nothing. I collapsed on the other side, nearly passing out. Within seconds, the coyotes slammed into the fence, howling, snarling, screaming at me from the other side. I clenched my knife, prepared for the worst until suddenly, silence. They were gone, the woods dead quiet. I staggered back to my truck, tossed the deer in, and called my dad to tell him what happened before deciding to take a nap in the parking lot. Bloody, scratched, and bruised, I passed out until tapping on my window and a bright light woke me. Both me and the young DNR officer staring back at me were equally shocked. Me looking like a wreck, him with wide eyes and baggy pants. I told him the story, he checked my information, and we both laughed before I went on my way. People often ask why I didn't just drop the deer and let the coyotes have it. Truth is, it wasn't even a big deer, just a 5-point buck, nothing special. I guess I was just too stubborn to let it go. At least it tasted great. And the DNR officer, I've run into him 3 times since while ice fishing. He still calls me Wildman, doesn't bother checking my info, and we've become friends of sorts. Story 18. I work at a summer camp where I take kids on multi-day canoe trips through national parks. One night, after setting up camp and dousing the fire, I was doing a final sweep when I noticed a lone man paddling a canoe across the lake. It was odd but not unheard of. He waved at me, and being the polite Canadian I am, I waved back. Later that night, I couldn't sleep and decided to step out for some stargazing. That's when I saw him again, this time standing inside our campsite, rifling through our tarps and bags. My stomach dropped. He was tall, towering compared to me, and he was dangerously close to the campers I was responsible for. When he noticed me, he stood up, startled. I grabbed the only defense I had, bear mace, the kind meant to stop a charging grizzly, and held it ready. I told him firmly to get out. He stammered, "Oh, I didn't see you guys," and then slowly backed off. As soon as he was gone, I woke the other staff, and together we made sure he left completely. We called the Rangers on the SAT phone, gave them our position, described him, and explained what had happened. That moment remains one of the scariest of my life. I've learned not to fear wild animals too much. Most are predictable, driven by instinct, and not malicious. People, on the other hand, are the most dangerous things you can encounter in the wilderness. Story 19. Back in Arkansas, near the Dover Lights, my friends and I were staying at a camper owned by a guy who practically lived in the woods half the year. He worked enough to make good money, then spent as much time as legally possible camping out there. He let my friend watch the place while he visited his son, and naturally, my friend invited me and a few others to hang out. We spent days drinking, smoking, fishing, and just messing around. Everything was fine until one night when a female friend, extremely drunk, burst outside completely naked and began eating beans straight out of a cold pot. As the more responsible one, I followed her out to make sure she didn't hurt herself, while the others laughed. There she was, covered in beans, when suddenly her head snapped up like a deer sensing danger. She stared at the trees with an intense glare, let out a growl, and sprinted into the pitch-black woods. I panicked, shouting for her, but she didn't answer. Against better judgment, I followed. About 5 meters into the darkness, I noticed a faint glow on the ground. It was a phone, recording in night vision mode, with fresh pictures on the screen. Images of us taken that night, including shots from outside the camper windows. The last photo was of my friend, captured mid-sprint, running straight toward the camera. My blood ran cold. I quickly deleted the images, smashed the phone screen on a rock, and turned back for help. When I returned to the camper, I was stunned to find her already back, naked and drunk, sitting in a lawn chair as if nothing had happened. I carried her inside and her boyfriend helped clean her up before they passed out together. She didn't remember anything the next morning, and I never told them the truth. But that night, I locked every door and barely slept, waking every hour to check that nothing else was out there. Story 20. I'm not a ranger, but an avid mountain climber in the Philippines, and I've had my share of strange experiences. One night, a group of us hiked in the central Luzon, taking the North Peak Trail since we had beginners with us. Around 4 in the morning, we broke camp and began descending. Almost an hour in, we realized we were looping. The same fallen tree, the same boulder, over and over again. The trail was straightforward and many of us had hiked it before. One superstitious hiker made us stop, form a circle, say a prayer, and leave an offering of food. Only then were we able to continue down without issue. Another story happened in 2015 on a day hike at Mount GB in southern Luzon. I had been there the week before and knew the trail, so I led 5 colleagues on a nighttime trek without a guide. As we hiked, we heard faint psst, psst noises. Thinking it might be locals, we ignored it. Later, on a narrow stretch bordered by shallow cliffs, one colleague urged me to shine my flashlight straight ahead. I didn't see anything, but he later whispered he'd seen a child standing right in front of me. On another climb at Mount B, also in southern Luzon, 2 friends and I were descending when a child approached us, offering to guide us for 5 pesos. He was neatly dressed, hair tidy, in a blue checkered shirt and white pants. We declined, knowing the trail well, but he followed us until he suddenly stopped, standing motionless no matter how we called out. Fellow mountaineers later told me the boy was likely a spirit child tied to the mountain. And then there are the infamous stories of Mount C, also called Devil's Mountain. One tale is of a couple who hiked at midnight, took a wrong fork in zero visibility storm conditions, and never made it to camp. Their bodies were never found. Another story tells of a group with a guide who ignored warnings from village elders to leave their only female hiker behind. They pressed on, encountered a mysterious couple who led them down the left fork, and when their flashlights simultaneously went out in the rain, the couple vanished. One hiker nearly fell into a ravine. Local lore says the mountain lures travelers astray, and those who take the wrong path may never return. Story 21. Back in the early 1990s, my brothers and I were staying with my cousin and her husband, who I'll call Scott. He was a Department of Natural Resources officer, and it was the opening day of bow season in northern Michigan. I was about 16 or 17 at the time, and while I was deep in the woods, easily a mile from any road or trail, I stumbled across what looked like a makeshift campsite. What struck me as odd was this strange outdoor kitchen setup. Being young and naive, I didn't think much of it. I assumed whoever had been there had packed up because hunting season had started. That night I told everyone about it, laughing at how odd it had looked. But Scott immediately grew serious. He asked for details, what it looked like, and where exactly I had found it. After I explained, he told me bluntly never to go back and to consider myself lucky nobody had been there. He explained that some locals used hidden spots like that to cook meth. It kept them from blowing up their homes and made it harder for authorities to catch them. He reported it, and a few days later, the cops raided the site. I had unknowingly walked into something dangerous, missing the people by only a few hours. Apparently, they had set up multiple trail cameras around the area, which was unusual back then since they were expensive. When authorities recovered the footage, they found images of the men not only cooking substances, but also carrying illegal weapons and riding customized four-wheelers easily recognized in the community. Their own arrogance gave them away. While the pictures weren't clear enough to show their faces, they still tied the evidence back to them, and the group ended up with 20-year prison sentences. Looking back, I realized just how badly that encounter could have gone. All I had on me was a bow and a knife, while they had been heavily armed. Story 22. I grew up in rural Alabama, on a mountain where my family's home sat in near isolation. For 2 or 3 miles in any direction, there was nothing but forest, just trees, leaves, and pine straw, except for the road leading to our house. When I was about 15 or 16, I had a girl over, and in an effort to impress her, I suggested we walk to my favorite spot in the woods. In hindsight, I know it was foolish, but at the time it felt like the perfect move. The spot was romantic, fireflies glowing, the sound of a small stream running nearby. At first, she was hesitant, but curiosity won her over, and we set off. I brought a lantern since I couldn't find my flashlight. It wasn't ideal, but it gave enough light to follow the path I had cleared. It was about a 10 to 15 minute walk, and halfway there, I noticed a faint buzzing sound. It wasn't loud enough to interrupt our conversation, but I caught it during the pauses. At first, I thought it was just the normal hum of bugs in spring, but the sound grew steadily louder. Eventually, my friend asked if I heard it too. Once I admitted I did, she insisted we turn back. To keep her comfortable, I agreed. But as we walked back, the sound didn't fade. It grew louder and clearer. Soon it was unmistakable, the eerie, drawn-out notes of a harmonica. Someone was out there in the dark, following us. By the time we reached the yard, we were running full speed, hearts pounding. We bolted inside the house, slammed the door, and rushed to a window facing the woods. We switched on the light and cracked the window open to listen. The sound of the harmonica drifted closer, passing the house before fading into the trees. To this day, it was one of the most surreal and terrifying experiences of my life. Strangely, it's also a cherished memory, because that girl turned out to be the one who got away. Story 23. When I was a kid living in the Colorado Rockies, I used to take my horse and our whole band of dogs, two labs, an Australian shepherd, and a dachshund, down to the pond near my grandparents' place. One day, I thought it would be fun to go the back way through the denser part of the pine forest. I knew the path well, and so did the animals, horse included. About 5 minutes from the house, I was lost in thought and didn't notice at first that the dogs had fallen behind. When I realized they weren't with me, I turned back. Out there, you never went anywhere without the dogs, They were basically my guardians. On the way back, I came up a small gully thick with pines, and there it was, a massive tom cougar standing in the path, staring straight at me. I was only 8 years old at the time, small, vulnerable, and an easy target. Luckily, my horse saw the cougar too and bolted straight back toward the pasture, carrying me with it. I think the cougar gave chase, but I didn't dare look back. We tore up the driveway and into the pasture, and that was the end of my adventure for the day. After I put the horse away, the dogs finally found me again, but they were acting nervous. As we walked back to the house, they grew more timid, their hackles up. I stopped and looked around. Sure enough, perched on a low branch of an old pine between the pasture and the house was that same cougar watching us. This time, the dog's presence kept it at bay. Keeping calm, I gave the tree a wide berth and went straight to tell my grandpa what had happened. He grabbed his rifle and went out searching, but never found it. From that day forward, I made sure to never go out in the woods without a dog or a weapon at my side. Story 24. I grew up in rural Alaska, and when I was about 8 years old, I went hunting with my uncle. We were tracking a small moose we had seen run across a field and into the woods. The forest was unusually quiet, but we chalked it up to our own noise scaring wildlife off. Eventually, we caught sight of the moose in another clearing. My uncle took a clean heart shot, and the animal only managed to stumble about 60 feet before collapsing at the forest edge. I complimented his aim, and we grabbed our gear to head over. But when we reached the spot, the moose was gone. Considering that a moose weighs well over 1,000 pounds, this made no sense. My uncle started into the trees, but the hair on my body stood on end, and I let out an involuntary whimper. My uncle looked at me, confused, when suddenly, just 30 feet away, we heard heavy, labored breathing. Fearing a grizzly, he shoved me behind him, raised his rifle, and shouted as loud as he could. That's when it happened. We heard a loud thud as something dropped the moose from several feet off the ground, followed by the sound of it crashing through the trees as it ran the other way. We never saw what it was in the dim light of the forest understory, but whatever it was had lifted a full-grown moose and carried it. My uncle didn't hesitate. He turned to me and said we were leaving. We didn't stick around to find out what could do that. Whatever it was, it got the moose. Story 25. I spent 10 years as a forest ranger with the United States Forest Service, and some of my favorite stories come from summer fire patrols when we were enforcing fire restrictions. One time, we found a guy camped right beside a lake. About 100 feet from his tent stood a massive, reflective yellow sign that read, "No camping or fires within half a mile of the lake." When I asked if he had seen the sign, he admitted that he had. Confused, I asked why he was camping there and why he had a campfire going. He told me he figured he was half a mile from the lake, so it was fine. I kicked a rock into the water and explained that he was actually about 10 feet from the shore and that I'd need his ID for a citation. Another time, we were driving past a day-use picnic area late at night. It was a developed site with fire pits, benches, restrooms, and water. Just outside of it was an old trail that led to a dismantled bridge. We had placed a Carsonite post there with clear stickers reading "Area Closed, No Fires, and Stay on Designated Trails." There was even a small American flag sticker at the bottom. When we rolled up, a raging fire burned so close that the heat had bubbled and warped the stickers. Angry, I demanded to know who was responsible. An older man stepped forward and said he would take responsibility, handing me his ID. Tucked inside his police badge holder. He was a local cop. I was floored. I gave him a stern lecture about respecting signage and reminded him that they had damaged government property. Those were just a couple of incidents. Over the years, I saw everything. Suicides, ATV accidents, bear attacks, reckless Boy Scout troops, poachers, murders, nudity, public S, underage drinking, airlifts, massive forest fires, and fire crews battling against the odds. But despite all of it, the chaos and the tragedies, I still miss that million-acre office. Hiking, biking, riding dirt bikes, snowmobiles, jeeps, and spending every day surrounded by forests, animals, and sunsets was an experience I'll never forget. Story 26. When I was 18, I worked with a family friend security company in a very rural area. In October, around 9 at night, we began our patrol of an abandoned manor house. The place had a long and eerie history, originally a home, then later a hotel, hospital, and nursing home. It was abandoned in the late 1960s. In the decades since, people broke in, set fires, and spread rumors that it was cursed and haunted. I didn't buy into the ghost stories, but the place always made me uneasy. That night was cold and dark, but usually the garden lights provided enough illumination that we didn't need flashlights. Then all at once the lights went out, every single one. We switched to our phones, but even our screens began flickering. At first I told myself it was just bad wiring. Rural areas often had faulty electricity. But then came the sound. From inside the house, a screeching erupted. It didn't sound human. My stomach dropped and my blood ran cold. For 30 seconds, the inhuman noise was joined by whispering, unintelligible but close, too close. Dark shadows flickered across our vision, depicting horrifying images of suicide and self-harm. All four of us froze, barely able to breathe. Finally, when it stopped, we called the police. They arrived quickly but found nothing. No signs of forced entry, no footprints, no evidence of anyone else being there. We were the only ones on the property. I've never set foot in that manor again. The others went back later and claimed nothing like it ever happened again. But for me, that night was enough to convince me there are things in this world that defy explanation. Story 27. I'm not a ranger, just an occasional hiker. But one time my girlfriend and I had a really unsettling experience in upstate New York, near New Windsor. It was a small trail, maybe 45 minutes to complete from start to finish, with a watchtower in the middle that rose above the tree line. We climbed up and spent about 10 minutes enjoying the view. Then we heard footsteps on the ladder. Looking down, I saw two young men climbing up, each with machetes strapped across their backs. My girlfriend started panicking, but I tried to stay calm. The platform at the top of the tower was barely 20 square feet, so suddenly it was the four of us crammed together up there. My girlfriend stood behind me while the two of them acted casual, gazing out over the trees. Nobody spoke for a few minutes. Finally, I broke the silence and asked what brought them out. One of them smirked and said, "We come out here pretty often looking for people." His tone was deliberately ominous, though it sounded forced, like they were trying to scare us. I shot back a joke. "You must have hidden the bodies really well," and everyone laughed except my girlfriend. The atmosphere was tense. I kept my eyes on their hands the whole time, waiting to see if they'd reach for their weapons. After a few minutes, without a word, they climbed back down, then ran off the trail and into the woods. My girlfriend and I decided not to waste any time. We climbed down quickly and sprinted back to the car. Once inside, she told me she recognized one of the guys. They had gone to high school together. He'd been one of the bullied kids, the kind people ignored or mocked, and she admitted she had bullied him too. Seeing him with a machete in the middle of the woods and realizing that connection made the whole encounter even more disturbing. Story 28. I grew up in the Southwest, and in high school, my friends and I often had weekend bonfires out in the desert. We'd haul pallets from the industrial park, stack them high, and soak them in gasoline. One night, after the fire burned low, we decided to drive further down the dirt road to see what was beyond our usual spot. The moon was bright, casting strange shadows across the ravines and hills. Eventually, we saw a cluster of vehicles parked in the distance. Curious, we cut the engine and lights and crept closer on foot. At first, the cars looked abandoned, but soon we heard voices over a ridge. Peeking over, we realized we had stumbled upon a Boy Scout camp. The adult leaders were clearly exhausted, yelling at the boys in a separate tent to quiet down, or they'd pack up and go home right then. After a long silence, we couldn't resist the urge to mess with them. We crept to the boys' tent and began whispering through the fabric in low voices. Things like, "Don't fall asleep, and I'm going to get you." Subtle enough to make them doubt whether they'd heard anything at all. Panic spread inside, and soon the boys were whispering frantically to each other. One of them called out to the adults, who shouted back angrily that it was their last warning. Emboldened, one of my friends started growling and clawing at the tent. In the moonlight, our shadows stretched against the thin walls. The boys screamed for the leaders. Furious now, the adults barked that everyone needed to get dressed because they were heading home immediately. We bolted back to our trucks, laughing the whole way. At the time, we thought it was hilarious, but looking back, it was a pretty cruel stunt to ruin a camping trip like that. My only regret is that we didn't stay hidden to watch what happened next, to see if the leaders believed the boys' terror. To any of those scouts who might remember that night, I'm sorry. I hope we didn't scar you for life about camping or convince you no one would believe you. Story 29. This happened when I was on vacation from the UK where I was working at the time. Around Christmas, the company had organized a big outing in the US with the entire American office there. During the party, one of the team members got drunk and wandered off into the national park. Before anyone asks, yes, getting that drunk in a national park is incredibly dangerous. Most of us had only one or two beers, but this guy couldn't handle his alcohol. He'd had too many cans of what everyone jokingly called Redneck's Finest. He was used to European pints, not American canned beer, and it really hit him. When he didn't return, we had to call for help. Luckily, we were already with a trail ranger who started guiding the search. As it got darker, pitch black in the forest, we spread out with flashlights. Hours passed with no sign of him. At some point, I lost track of the ranger and the others, and suddenly I realized I was alone in marshland, with only my mobile to try and communicate. That's when the fear set in. I began hearing heavy, muddy footsteps behind me, the sound of something sloshing through the wet ground. I spun around with my flashlight, but the sound stopped. I kept walking, and the noise started again. Each time I turned the light back, it went silent. The pattern repeated until dread overwhelmed me, and I took off running, heart pounding. Eventually, I reached a stand of trees and nearly collapsed. That's when I stumbled right into the ranger, who had found the missing coworker, still very drunk and slurring his words. I explained what had just happened, the footsteps in the marsh, and the ranger looked at me gravely. He told me the marsh was infested with alligators, and that was likely what I'd heard. Apparently, when they creep up on prey in shallow water, they make that exact sloshing sound. Worse, people had been attacked there before. He said I was either very brave or very stupid to have walked through that area, especially alone. He explained that shining a flashlight at them sometimes makes them freeze, which is why the noise stopped whenever I turned around. We eventually made it back to the hotel with our drunk coworker, who was barely able to stand. The ranger congratulated me on my courage, though in truth it was nothing but ignorance. If I had known I was walking through alligator territory, I never would have set foot in that marsh. To this day, I still think about how differently that night could have ended. Story 30. When I was about 8 years old, we used to camp in the forest behind my grandparents' house. Since it was their land, it was completely private property, and we thought it was the safest place in the world. One night while we were out there, my oldest cousin was tending the fire, and the second oldest was teaching us how to pitch a tent. Suddenly, we heard the sharp crack of a stick breaking. We turned to see a man standing about 20 meters away. He looked to be in his 30s, dressed in ripped clothing, and wearing a blue ball cap with the rim torn off. He just stood there staring. My cousin pulled out his pocket knife, and at that, the man bolted into the woods. We were shaken but tried to carry on. Later that night, I woke to the sound of someone walking around the tent. My heart was pounding. Terrified, I gripped my cousin's knife and held it as tightly as I could, staying silent, frozen. The footsteps circled for what felt like forever before they finally faded away. In the morning, I asked my parents if any of them had checked on us, but they all said no. To this day, I have no idea who that man was. My best guess is that he was homeless and trying to camp on the land, but his behavior made it clear he wasn't in his right mind. I'll probably never know for sure. Story 31. Back in high school, I joined a climb on Mount Merapi in Indonesia, which stands about 3,000 meters high. We were a group of 20 people. Five of them trained climbers and the rest newbies like me. Strange things happened throughout the climb, but the experience that stuck with me came during the descent. The group split into three smaller groups. I was with the second group, but since some of the girls were moving slowly, one of the experienced climbers and I asked if we could go ahead. The instructor gave permission, so we set off at a quicker pace. After a short while, my friend told me he needed to stop to use the bathroom and said I could keep going since the trail was easy. It was midday, and I could see the path clearly, so I agreed and went ahead alone. Soon I entered an unusual part of the mountain. Unlike the rainforest trees that made up the rest of the climb, this area was filled entirely with bamboo. It formed a circular grove about 50 meters across. I stepped inside, clearly seeing the exit trail on the far side. But once I entered, the way out was gone. Confused, I turned to go back the way I came in, but that entrance had vanished too. Panic surged. I ran in circles for what felt like 2 or 3 minutes trying to find an opening. Then suddenly the entrance I'd used to get in appeared again, just as if it had never been gone. I stumbled back out, shaken, and decided to wait for my friend. To this day, I can't explain what happened in that bamboo grove. Story 32. About 6 years ago, I was on a cadet weekend at Thetford Training Ground in East Anglia, UK. The place has been used for training for over a century, so it's full of history, though I'd never heard of any major hauntings tied to the area. It's a varied landscape for England. Open plains, thick stretches of pine trees with large clearings, and scattered shrubs.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
No big native animals except the occasional fox or badger, but they usually keep clear because of the noise from exercises and gunfire. One evening, five of us cadets were patrolling the edge of a massive open clearing, about 3 square kilometers wide. The only thing standing out in that vast plain was a large mound in the center. Suddenly, one of the cadets shouted, "Stand to!" And in the excitement, we all dropped to the ground. Rifles pointed toward the mound. Our NCO said he'd seen a figure standing on top of it and assumed it was a sergeant testing us. We advanced cautiously, only to find nothing. No footprints, no sign of anyone at all. The NCO was only 16, I was 13 at the time, and he seemed genuinely rattled. Could he have been messing with us? Sure, but something about the way he reacted told me he probably wasn't. That night, we set up camp in a lightly wooded area and began sentry duties. I had one of the first watches and couldn't shake the feeling that I was being watched. Having a rifle, no magazines of course, weirdly made me feel braver, so I stuck it out. Later in the night, another sentry called "Stand to" after hearing loud rustling in the bushes. We were all spooked, so the adults went to investigate. They later told us it was just a stray sheep from a nearby farm. But on the bus ride back, they admitted they never actually found the source of the noise, and only said that to keep us calm. One of the adult leaders, a tough woman who was rarely fazed by anything, later told me she had always found that ground unsettling. She said once, while walking back to camp alone at night, she swore she heard footsteps following her, always stopping when she did. She wasn't the type for jokes or pranks, so when she admitted that, it stuck with me. Nothing outright terrifying happened, but those strange moments, seeing figures, unexplained noises, that creeping sense of being watched, made the whole training ground feel just a little out of the ordinary. Story 33. When I was about 14, my friends and I went to stay at a buddy's family farm in rural New Hampshire. There wasn't much around, just farmland and endless stretches of forest. Around midnight, after hours of goofing off, smoking cheap cigars, and building a bonfire in one of the cow pastures, we decided to head back to the house. To get there, we had to cut 1/2 mile through woods and across another field. Our friend's dad had a habit of messing with us on that walk back, usually waiting on the porch and shooting Roman candles at us as we crossed the open ground. So when we emerged from the path and heard loud rustling in the tree line about 70 yards away, we immediately assumed it was him. We laughed, ran into the middle of the field, and laid down, bracing for fireworks. 5 minutes passed. The rustling continued, footsteps darting tree to tree, sudden bursts of movement followed by silence, but no Roman candles. Our smiles faded. Jokes about his dad's prank shifted into nervous questions about black bears or other animals. Then as my buddy stood and called the house landline on his cell phone to check, everything changed. My other friend and I stayed low, eyes locked on the tree line. Out of nowhere, something ran into the open. I'll never forget it. Even at about 50 yards in dim crescent moonlight, it was clear this was no person. It was impossibly tall, with freakishly long arms and legs, its body a pale gray-white. The way it moved was all wrong. Its limbs swung like pendulums, jerking unnaturally fast as it streaked across part of the field before vanishing back into the forest. It covered the ground far quicker than anything human could. My friend and I exchanged a look of pure terror, silently agreeing to run. Just then, our buddy walked back toward us, phone in hand, completely oblivious. His dad had answered. He said he'd been in bed for over an hour. Without a word, the two of us who had seen the thing bolted for the house, screaming for him to follow. We made it back, slammed the door shut, and told the others what we had witnessed. Nobody slept that night. The next morning, our friend's dad, whose bedroom was on the ground floor, told us that throughout the night he had heard banging on the walls and windows. He claimed he'd gone out several times with his shotgun, but never found anything. At first, we thought he was messing with us, but to this day, he insists it really happened. Whatever we saw out there, it wasn't his prank, and it wasn't anything we were prepared to face in the woods that night.